This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about censorship. Just really quickly, we have such a huge show for you. Ben Weingarten's going to join us here in a couple minutes, but censorship, control is really what it is. Censorship isn't really the right word to use. It's control, controlling what you're allowed to see, hear, what you're allowed to say. And just understand why the communist loves it now and why the communist has always loved it. He is selling misery. He understands that. He cannot possibly exist without lies, without putting on a mask, without hiding what he wants to do to you in your country. So he must control everything. Big shout out to Hillary Clinton for once again putting something on tape that proves my point perfectly.
There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to explain it away. Autocracy is on the march, and we now have a government in the United States that has thrown in its lot with the autocrats, which has made a choice to support those who wage war, not peace, who have given enormous power to the men who control the information flow in our world, who have all pledged allegiance to the continuation of algorithms that not only addict us, but poison us with hatred and fear.
You know what she's saying. This free speech stuff is dangerous to all the control we used to have. They believe in control because what they're selling is horrific and they know it. That's why abortion becomes women's reproductive rights. That's why you could go down the list of every single issue and you will find out they have somehow come up with some language that lies about what it really is. And don't think this is just something that exists over in Europe or China or North Korea. It's right here in the good old US of A. We've been living in it for years now. During COVID, we saw it turned into overdrive. And so many of these people, Trump or no Trump, are still in their positions of power. We're going to talk about the censorship industrial complex. We're going to talk about control. Ben Weingarten has so many thoughts on this, and he joins us next.
I believe that dismissing people, dismissing their concerns, or worse yet, shutting down media, shutting down elections, or shutting people out of the political process protects nothing. In fact, it is the most surefire way to destroy democracy. And speaking up and expressing opinions isn't election interference. Even when people express views outside your own country, and even when those people are very influential. And trust me, I say this with all humor, if American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk. But what German democracy, what no democracy, American, German, or European will survive, is telling millions of voters that their thoughts and concerns, their aspirations, their pleas for relief are invalid or unworthy of even being.
I love that. I love that America is starting to lead when it comes to freedom again, and it saddens me a great deal. What's happening in Europe and what happened in this country, let's not just point fingers across the pond, under the Biden administration. Joining me now to discuss the censorship, the communist love of it, and so many other things is Ben Weingarten, editor-at-large of Real Clear Investigations. Ben, Communists are selling something evil and horrible. They always have been. And so they've always believed in controlling what people can see and hear. It's just that simple, because you can't sell a demonic religion of destruction if you're being honest about it.
Absolutely right. And to your point, that's why the communists generally go after religions first, because as an anti-religion, they don't want to have to compete against a religion that actually puts in place a system where man isn't God and lording over slaves, but people are actually endowed with inalienable rights. They can think for themselves. They can pursue their interests, their passions, their ambitions as they see fit, and they can be sovereign. They can be kings in their own home. And to your point, at core, the censorship, what I would call the censorship industrial complex that has lorded over American speech and really global speech for the last decade or so, at the end, to your point, is all about power and control. If you can control the narrative, you can control populations. You can control and maintain a political monopoly and therefore monopolize power. Pure and simple, that's what censorship is about. And they will drum up all kinds of other justifications for it. We don't want dangerous speech, so-called, to proliferate, because that can lead people to go down bad paths, and it can threaten national security, it can threaten public health, etc. But these are all pretexts that in reality are used to silence dissenters from regime orthodoxy, whoever that regime is and whatever their orthodoxy is. And Vice President Vance there, even though it may have fallen on deaf ears, and I love that you have the Europeans not laughing at the joke about Greta Thunberg, but he's raising a very serious and basic and fundamental point, which is that governments are responsible to their people. And if not, they're basically acting as masters and we are the slaves, as opposed to them actually governing with our consent and being responsive to our concerns. And if you're going to silence the other half of a country, if you're going to not permit dissent, you're not being responsive to your people and you're not a government. You're a tyranny. And thank God, what a change in administration from one that not only supported a censorship industrial complex here, but supported its growth abroad as well. And now we have an administration that defends that liberty, that natural right at home, and is also going to defend our liberties abroad as well. And we're going to work together with allies and partners who actually share those values and principles, as opposed to privileging those who talk about democracy while they impose policies that are anything but, including when it comes to speech.
Yeah, and it's funny you brought up about the safety thing. I remember like it was yesterday, Jen Psaki and all of them talking about how they had to go to Facebook. Well, here she was about COVID.
In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken, or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation.
It blew me away. I remember watching things like that, Ben. I'm sure it had the same effect on me that it did on you. And my jaw would just drop. It's not just that they were doing it. They were bragging that they were doing it. Of course, it's always for your safety. Always, always, always. Stalin said the exact same stuff. Mao said the same stuff. It's always for your safety, of course. But here in the United States of America, the land of the free, they felt totally comfortable standing up in front of the American people and let them know that the White House was flagging problematic posts. I'm floored at what's happened to this country.
A tyranny for your own good, of course.
Yeah,
and
of course.
You're right. They say it, and it's like so matter of fact, the approach. Oh, yeah, we're going to surveil social media en masse for ideas and opinions and even facts that we don't like. And then we're going to tell the big tech companies that we have the power to destroy with regulations and even by a statement from a president who says, by the way, you're killing people by what you allow to traffic on your platform. And we're going to tell them, you better take down this speech we don't like. But it's all for public health and fully in accordance with public health authorities, who, of course, didn't abuse those authorities and run roughshod over our rights and invent out of thin air things like 6 feet social distancing and made us wear three masks that didn't do a thing, and on, of course. But even if that weren't the justification for it, the fact that they could build that apparatus is the thing that's really terrifying. And I dove pretty deep in investigative reporting and testified a couple times before Congress on what they actually did. But it is staggering what that administration built in the way of a censorship apparatus. And through that pretext of first public health and pandemic emergency measures, and then expanding it way beyond that, and really starting with the pretext of the Russians are interfering in our system, and so there's a real problem on social media, and we need to clamp down on foreign information operations and interference, then we're going to take those powers and graft them onto Americans, because actually, it doesn't really matter where the wrongthink is coming from. What matters is the content of the wrongthink. So we're not going to care that much about attribution. And basically, you had a number of agencies within the federal government, including a sub-agency in Department of Homeland Security that no one ever heard of, CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and they created, essentially, an outsourced censorship regime. Everyone has heard by this point about the Disinformation Governance Board that the Biden administration had to scrap because people called it out for the Orwellian tyrannical engine that it would have been. But already, a DGB, a Disinformation Governance Board, really existed, but they outsourced it to try and flout law and the Constitution, and of course, the First Amendment. You had CISA working with third-party, quote-unquote, NGOs, researchers, academic institutions, and they created a non-governmental so-called vehicle, at least in name, that would look to social media en masse, all of our tweets, all of our Facebook posts, for narratives that threatened election infrastructure. That is, if you had questions about the integrity of mass mail-in balloting, of all the other pandemic-era, quote-unquote, emergency measures that were imposed to eviscerate and erode the integrity of the 2020 elections, they said that poses a threat to our critical election infrastructure. So your tweets basically questioning mail-in balloting and those ballot boxes all over the country, those were like potential mini terror attacks. And CISA worked with third parties to lobby the social media companies to change their content moderation policies, so-called, really, their censorship strategies, to make sure that anything challenging election integrity from their perspective would be potentially flagged and categorized as wrongthink and liable to be censored, violating their terms of service. And these outsourced entities, and I'm thinking primarily of the Election Integrity Partnership here, went about flagging tweets, Facebook posts, and other content violating the very social media content moderation policies they lobbied the social media companies to create and got Americans censored. Some of that content was flagged by the government. And of course, this vehicle was created by the government to avoid the First Amendment issues by creating another entity to do it. And you had multiple federal courts agree this was censorship by proxy. This was maybe the greatest attack on the First Amendment in American history at the scale of social media. And sadly, and in some ways, this brings us to today, where we see this kind of crisis playing out in other realms. The Supreme Court refused to rule on the merits of that case. They said the plaintiffs lacked standing, and they kicked it back to the lower courts. So we didn't get the Supreme Court to step in and say, what happened here was censorship by proxy. You had government pushing all these social media companies to censor. It created vehicles on the outside to push them to censor. Things that the government wanted flagged got censored. They abridged our speech. They tried to abridge our speech. There was a conspiracy to do it by proxy from these third parties, if not directly by what the government was saying in direct emails and phone conversations and publicly to the social media companies. Supreme Court would not step in and do its duty to rule on the merits and to curtail and prohibit that behavior. So now it's incumbent upon a president and a Congress to do it. The executive branch has started that work. It started it within hours of the president's inauguration with an executive order. And now it's time for Congress to do its job beyond the oversight it did, which was important over the last 4 years, to expose the size, scope, and nature of this complex of government agencies and NGOs and academic entities and beyond that work to silence us directly and by proxy.
Ben, these people, obviously they're a bunch of nutballs, and I don't like to, we don't man worship here anybody on the show, but Elon Musk purchasing Twitter, which of course he renamed X, which is kind of weird, but anyway, he renamed it X. It sounds small if you're not somebody aware of how powerful social media has become, but he really is the mortal enemy of all these evil monsters, isn't he? The fact that he took one of the biggest companies and freed it up, for lack of a better way to put it, they had everything. And the fact that he took one thing, it really hurt them, didn't it?
It really hurt them. And it also has now caused the other social media companies to, at least in their rhetoric, if not in their policies, have to change and go back towards something more closely resembling free speech, even though they're still by no means there, if for no other reason than the competitive pressure that X brought to it. But I think to your point, we ought to have thought of social media companies pre the second Trump administration as essentially controlled assets of the national security and intelligence apparatus. We would have liked to think of them as, this is the digital public square. This is the printing press. This is newspapers. This is the public square in 21st century America. But in reality, while they may have started out that way, governments, including our own, realized that if you could harness this power, first of all, these are tools of mass surveillance and intelligence, because you can develop a massive profile on people if you know what they're saying and who they're communicating with at what times and where and what the impact is, but also that you can manipulate public opinion if you can control what is allowed to be propagated on the social media platforms and what isn't seen, what's banned and what's shadow banned, what doesn't get the circulation that it otherwise would. So in the hands of good and benevolent people, these platforms can be great tools. And in the hands of those who want to exploit them, sometimes maybe in pursuit of beneficial things, but other times eviscerating our rights here at home, you can see the danger in it. And he took essentially what I would argue is a national security or intelligence asset out of the hands of those services, because it was the national security and intelligence apparatus that was pressuring and colluding with the likes of X and the executives at the other companies to ensure that the narrative they wanted was out there and things they didn't want, like the Hunter Biden laptop story, weren't out there. And he took it and he put up $40+ billion to say, I'm going to free the bird, as he put it. That was a courageous move in terms of the principle of let's defend free speech. It's courageous because he might have lit billions of dollars on fire. And maybe it was most courageous of all because as a consequence of it, all of these other governments that wanted to have control over the social media companies now feared that there was an asset that was not in their hands. He disarmed them. He took it out of their hands. And of course, there was a massive onslaught against Musk as a consequence of it. And that onslaught continues, and it only intensified, of course, when he backed Trump. But you had the Biden administration, any number of agencies investigating him after. You had the European governments who hate his guts. They have their own regulatory regime that threatens to impose crippling fines on the likes of X and other social media companies if they don't censor content the way that those European governments want. And of course, most of the European nations have nothing remotely resembling the First Amendment that governs their regulatory regime. So this was a courageous move, a costly move in defense of free speech. And thank God he did it. It's still not a perfect social media platform by any means. But when we look back in history, and really if you look at the ability to have anything resembling a republic, of course it depends first on the ability to be able to debate, to share information, ideas, to argue, and may the best argument win. And you can make the case that if he didn't buy X and if he didn't take all these slings and arrows, and by the way, if he weren't so important to the US government as well because of all the technologies he develops that have sort of made him a protected man in some ways, despite all the slings and arrows against him, you know, this could be the difference between freedom and tyranny in this country when we look back on it over the long run.
Ben, something I was thinking about, actually, I was thinking about it this morning. I was thinking about COVID and all the evil, horrible lockdown crap all the demons in this country did. And then I thought about where all those people are now. And this could expand way beyond COVID. We're obviously talking about censorship here. All the evil things that were done to the American people over the last 4 or 5, 6 years, 10 years, pick your number, doesn't matter. The people who did it are not in prison. Most of them are not, you know, resigning, retired, fired in disgrace, had to change their name and move into the Rocky Mountains somewhere. These people are still among us, and many of them still have a bunch of power and the desire to do what they did again. How do we stop that?
Yeah, and to your point, they even took preemptive steps like pardoning the likes of Anthony Fauci and others to try and protect themselves. What we have right now is the beginnings of it, which is, first of all, you have all of these people who were targeted by the censorship apparatus, by the public health establishment and others, and they have actually assumed the very seats with the very authorities that were used to try and destroy them before. So I'm thinking of course, RFK Jr., of course, Donald Trump himself, Jay Bhattacharya at NIH, and others as well. Bhattacharya, by the way, was one of the plaintiffs in that case that went to the Supreme Court I mentioned before, and one of the leaders of the Great Barrington Declaration, which called for essentially liberty in response to the COVID response. But he was one of the plaintiffs in that case, Missouri v. Biden. So you have people who were targeted by the regime and by the system who are now in places of power. And that's a start. There's some level of justice in that. The Trump administration goes further in the way of policy. And a big part of how these people have accrued their powers is, first of all, obviously, when they're in government. But second of all, on the outside, when they're in this gulag archipelago of NGOs and think tanks, et cetera, and academic institutions. And the Trump administration put forth that first day executive order, which essentially says no federal personnel can engage in this sort of censorship directly or by proxy behavior. And also no federal resources can go towards it. And that, of course, means money. And money, government money, is part of the lifeblood of all of these outside organizations, imperative to them. It helped birth this whole burgeoning censorship ecosystem on the outside. So depriving it of government employees, depriving it of government policies, and depriving it of federal government money is hugely significant and shouldn't be understated, as is the oversight work, because no one wants to be named and shamed and exposed. And if you could put a face and a resume and a record with the kind of tyrannical activity that we saw, no one wants that. So all of those things matter. The executive action and the oversight work matters. The next thing has to be codifying this in the law. And there's evidence that this Congress is going to try to do it. Let's see what happens. You know, it's obviously, we've been burned before expecting there to be robust legislative action. And there are some who would, you would think, be on our side who aren't on this issue. You have to have legislative action to codify it so that you can turn the president's executive action into law that's on the books and that can outlast any one president. Now, I would step back and say it's absurd on its face that you need laws to codify what the First Amendment already says. But these people have so perverted our system and have such a warped perspective on what their powers ought to be, and they think they know best for the American people. And so consequently, I think you need laws, and not only laws that codify what the administration is doing, and the administration is also, by the way, going to go back and do a review of everything the Biden administration did, and maybe there'll be some law enforcement action at the end of all that. But beyond that, I think there needs to be real teeth to the laws. And that means you have to have criminal penalties. It can't just be you get fired, maybe you lose your pension if you engage in this sort of conduct. There have to be criminal penalties, and then the law has to be enforced, because if not, there is no deterrent action. And to your point, few have paid any real price except maybe being out of power. And so far, maybe their budgets have been cut, their prestige has been lost, they've been exposed publicly, and half the country may find them to be contemptible. Until and unless there is real teeth, there's gonna be nothing to deter that sort of action. And basically, you're going to have tyrants in waiting, ready to spring when there's a new administration, a new Congress, et cetera. So it has to be done by law. executive action, and then ultimately you got to change the culture, and that's the really hard part. You have to have a country that produces people who don't view the world the way these people view the world and think they're smarter than everyone else, they're morally superior to everyone else, and so they not only have a right but an obligation to lord over us. And that's a generational project, and that's a project that we all have to engage in our own lives, starting with our families, our friends, and in our communities.
Yeah, that's the long term. I totally agree. That's the ultimate solution. And I'm glad you brought up people going to prison, because everyone just thinks I'm an unhinged barbarian when I say we can't save the country without government people going to prison. And yes, I hate the government and I can't stand these people, but that's not why I say it. Unless government people go to prison, they're just going to do all the same stuff again because they know they can. There's no consequences. Kevin Kleinsmith getting 12 months probation for using his job at the FBI to lie on a freaking warrant application. He should be buried under the federal jail somewhere. The guy should never breathe free air again, but these people are never held to account.
And to your point, who was the presiding judge in the Kleinsmith case? I believe it was Judge James Boasberg.
It was. It was. Same freaking guy. Ben, my brother, thank you. Come back soon. I appreciate you. All right. We're not done. We'll be back. It's amazing how long censorship has been around. You know, it didn't start with Joe Biden by any stretch of the imagination. It didn't even start with communism. Tyrants, evil people who can't sell their ideas to the masses simply try to control them. That's what they do. Evil people abound, and evil people who want to do evil things will always try to control what you can see, hear, and say. Joining me now to talk about this and many things, my friend Jeffrey Tucker, founder and president of the wonderful Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey, censorship may have been pushed into overdrive in this country under President Joe Biden, if we're still pretending he was president, but it didn't begin with him. The communists in particular have loved it forever. They need it.
We don't know how long we've lived in a censored world. I suspect it's been for most of our lives, actually. It's true that we didn't have the technology in the past to know everything in real time and to get a diverse range of views. I mean, I grew up in a world with three television stations that all had the same thing, and nobody really had much hunger for news beyond that. On the other hand, we kind of trusted the system. We figured that everything worked just fine. And nobody really questioned it. But now, then, that with technology came along to make everybody a reporter, you know, to have citizen journalism, as Elon says. And it's like the ruling class just panicked and said, okay, no, we're going to make the internet work exactly the way television worked in the 1970s. And the Biden administration even put out a document to that effect called Declaration on the Future of the Internet, in which they imagined a world of stakeholders working with governments. So that's what they were going to do. And then they would have gotten away with it too, but for Elon Musk and the purchase of Twitter and turning it into X has just blown up in the entire world and done much more besides. So now we're facing this kind of astonishing information flood on an increasing level, and we can't even believe what we're seeing. It's every day is kind of mind-blowing, and the lesson is always the same, that we've been lied to, we've been robbed, we've been pillaged, and that there's an overclass out there that has long lived at our expense. So that seems like, you know, the upshot of what we're learning, and every day and every minute has just been an unfolding of that truth.
Jeffrey, this may sound off topic, maybe it is off topic, but hearing you describe it in that way, you know what bugs me is I love history. I'm a history freak. I geek out on ancient history, but to World War II, you name it. I'm a history geek. I guess that's part of getting old and gray. I just love history. And the older the history gets, the fewer and fewer sources you get for any one story. You know, in World War II, you're going to have a bunch of sources, but the Battle of Troy, you'd have one. Did it even happen, right? How much of the history that I know and love, that maybe you know and love, that people watching know and love, how much of the history of the world is just a flat-out lie?
You know, it's amazing that you say, that you put it that way and that you say it that way. That is exactly what I've been thinking. And we have to rethink kind of everything, you know, from the fall of Rome through everything. And I can't get enough of this now. And probably you're in the situation I am, where I'm just in a constant state of incredulity, you know. You know, oh, that's what you say happened. What really happened? You know, and from the Brownstone point of view, we're mainly dedicated to figuring out the history of the last 5 years, and it is not easy. I can tell you, it's kind of a nonstop investigative effort, and it's truly overwhelming. And it would have been impossible without all these new tools that we have. But even with them, we're still trying to piece it together. To say nothing of, you know, the Cold War, you know, the Latin American wars of the 1980s, Vietnam, you know, Korea. You know, just go back in time, and who knows what it is we don't know. And then we had this document dump from the CIA, because there's in Washington, if you've hung around Washington enough, you figure this out, that there's two information streams. I mean, one is what the public knows, and the other is the classified information stream, and there's a firm barrier between those two things. And Trump was advocating for the release of the JFK files, and he pushed for it. Last time he pushed for it. This time he put out an executive order demanding it, and it still wasn't coming. So finally he went to the JFK Performing Arts Center, the Kennedy Performing Arts Center, and announced that they would be coming, sending the entirety of the Washington establishment into overdrive panic. And they dumped all these documents, withholding some, but... And they weren't even entirely sure, according to the New York Times anyway. The New York Times is panicked about this. They were not even sure entirely what it is that they dumped. And we're getting our first look at it now. And of course, it turns out the CIA, you know, the operations of the CIA are revealed within these documents, confirming your worst fears, you know. But that's the way we're getting the information out. So I guess to some extent, I feel like there's no chance we're ever going to put this genie back in the bottle, and I'm quite frankly glad about that.
How does the normal person, how do they navigate this new world? Because you brought up Elon Musk and X and social media and Trump, the JFK files, and right. So okay, now we went from having a few very tightly controlled sources by evil people to now it's endless. Now, at this point in time, if you want to drink water, you have to drink from a fire hydrant that's just been opened up. And anyone with any experience in that knows that can be extremely dangerous and hazardous to your health. So if I'm a normal person and I wake up in the morning and I pick up my phone, how do I even start to walk through this world? What do I do?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a completely different world with a kind of a constant dopamine rush, which, as you say, is not actually very helpful about this. You know, it's not helpful for us spiritually and mentally and otherwise. But we've got decades of disinformation to unravel, and those are just the times we live in. And we're going to find out worse and worse things every day. I've been, quite frankly, shocked beyond anything that I ever expected about the revelations from Doge, and I don't think that people have fully processed the implications of what they've said over and what they've discovered over the last couple of months. And I mean, like, even a conservative estimate is that 10% of the U.S. Budget is essentially unaccounted for. I mean, that's an unbelievable figure. I mean, we're talking about since the end of World War II, something like, what, $20 trillion has come and gone that's not been accounted for? Whoa. And that, But what do you do with that kind of information? How do you run that down? I don't know. And then you've got the other problem that the Trump administration and the people within the Trump administration that want transparency, that want to get the information out, are facing attacks from every angle, unrelenting, like every single minute of every day is and not to mention threats on their lives, right? And now Elon's faced with having Tesla dealerships burning and Tesla's burning on the street and people selling the stock and everything. It's what a time to be alive. Astounding.
Yeah. Speaking of the last 5 years and Brownstone and the work you've been doing, I'll never be able to let it go. Jeffrey, maybe that's the Irish in me, maybe it's just the Kelly thing, but I'm never going to let it go what I watched happen to this country when we got a new virus from China. The other day I brought it up online, and I've talked about this on the show before, the fact that every single institution in the United States of America, from the medical institutions to the freaking Central Intelligence Agency, demanded that everybody say it didn't come from a lab when it came from a lab. And again, it's not the lie that's amazing. Why? Why is it every institution in the country decided to together join forces and lock shields against the truth? And that's just one of a million ways they tried to censor out all the honesty, all the true things during COVID.
And the silliness, right? I mean, the 6 feet of distance, censorship, the claims that the vaccine was the magic cure when it clearly was not, and anybody could have known that even without reading the EUA. The extended closures that ruined kids' lives, the destruction of small business, and the silence on the part of elite sectors, in academia and in media and so on. It's incredible. It's an event that discredits an entire generation of legacy institutions, from think tanks to universities to professors to media outlets, and they're terrified for people to talk about it, really. And yet we have to talk about it, and we should not get over it. We need a truth on what happened over the last 5 years, why all this stuff happened, who was behind it, why they engaged in it, just some truth and honesty. I think we're going to get there, but it's going to take new institutions like Brownstone and you to make it happen, because the legacy just doesn't, they want it all, gone. The New York Times has only recently started saying basically mistakes were made, now shut up. That's essentially it. But there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more going on, and forget justice. We just need truth.
Yeah. Talk to me about Murthy versus Missouri.
Yeah, the censorship issue. Here's the problem. It's not a problem. Trump has put in an executive order that forbids federal agencies from being involved in, and it was a very good executive order, in any kind of third party censorship efforts, and that presumably makes that litigation kind of puts it on the back burner. And meanwhile, that the litigators had worked for years on discovery to get little bits and pieces. Actually, they got about 10,000 pages. But then Zuckerberg comes out and just confesses the whole thing, right? They're just being perfectly honest. Yeah, they censored at the behest of governments. The problem with the executive order is that it's not in law yet. And that litigation is going to be ongoing, but I doubt that we're going to get anything from the Supreme Court out of it. What we really need is some strict legislation from the center, and that would help. At the same time, the censorship goes on. This is part of the problem. All of these platforms, from LinkedIn to Facebook to YouTube, have deep algorithmic structures that were trained to censor. So they no longer needed the pressure from the federal government to do it. And just to give you an example, when Elon took over Twitter, they tried to rip out all the guts of the censorship. But even now, there's certain links and certain things that you find that will trigger X to say, oh, you can't post that. But the note goes to the legacy URL, twitter.com, not to X. So you can tell that this is just legacy code still in there. So they've been working for a year to get rid of all the machinery of censorship within the algorithms and have been unable to do a complete job. And that process at YouTube and Google and LinkedIn and so on hasn't even begun. So, in effect, we don't have sort of intensifying censorship, but we have legacy censorship is still, a continuing reality at all those platforms. Then you have the problem of the mainstream media, which has a deep culture of political bias and aspirational professionals who know better than to say anything that would expose the racket. So those institutions are kind of done. I mean, what's interesting to me, you have Jeff Bezos over at the Washington Post made a big announcement. We're not going to be biased anymore. We're going to have the op-ed page is going to be filled with, it's going to have content that's in favor of, for example, freedom. Well, that caused resignations all around. Well, we can't do that. That's a terrible idea. And that announcement, I think, was made maybe a month or six weeks ago. Nothing has changed on the op-ed page. So what do you do? I think at some point you're just gonna have to fire everybody. I don't know.
All right. Finally, this brings me actually to the thing that, to be honest, it frightens me a little bit. And part of it is just because I don't understand it. I'm not a technological person. AI, artificial intelligence. I know what it is. I mean, I know at least the basics of it. I certainly could not explain the code or anything like that behind it, but I get it, what it is. But I'm very, very concerned about the worst people in the world coming up with the new technology that's going to only favor them. It's something that concerns me greatly.
When AI first came out, and you probably remember this, it was ChatGPT just kind of dropped on the world. Everybody said, oh, this is wonderful. And then Google got its own AI, and oh, this is wonderful. Except people quickly discovered it was wildly biased. You remember that you tried to get ChatGPT or one of the other AI engines to draw a picture of founding fathers, and it looked, didn't look anything like the founding fathers, so to speak. And the questions were skewed, and it seemed like we were living in an Orwellian world. Well, Grok came along, which is, once again, Elon Musk, and became an uncensored, unbiased, trainable, non-woke AI engine. And so everybody else just immediately shaped up, right? So it was only that competitive pressure that fix that. So it's like we keep dodging these bullets one by one. But ultimately, the censorship will be baked into AI, and it probably already is at Google and at Facebook and elsewhere. And at that point, the machines run us, and it doesn't require any kind of decision making on the part of any actual human person. So, AI is going to lead to a world where we're fed, nonstop propaganda. And like I say, the only thing that separates us from that is, Grok, one guy in one platform. So it's tremendously scary just how close we came.
No doubt. Jeffrey, as always, thank you, sir. Appreciate you very much. I don't even understand AI, but I understand it enough that it makes me nervous. Anyway, we're not done yet. We'll be back. I believe you should be able to say what you want to say. I think if you have ideas that are different than mine, that you should be able to voice those ideas just as loudly as I do. I don't need or have any desire to control you. That's because I'm not a filthy communist. Remember, when the communists tell you who they are, believe them. And they always, always, always will sell their censorship desires as keeping you safe. Don't ever listen, all right? We'll do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.